Welcome to another edition of Blah Blah Sports. Nothing special about this one. Well, there is a lot. There is something special about this one. We are talking the NFL draft, the schedule that came out in the NFL as well, some games we're looking at, and of course, baseball. And as always, my partner in crime, Sean Smith. Sean, how you doing, buddy?
What's up?
a lot is up. We had game and a big day in the NFL.
You excited
and big
about those Phillies?
No.
Neither am I.
Well, I will say though, it was fun watching your Houston import for us, Vince Velasquez, strike out 16.
That's okay. He'll be down in the minors by the second half of the season.
Oh man, how's Houston season doing? Been so far?
A little shaky. A little shaky. Yeah, their starting lineup's not as good as people thought it was.
Not as good as it is on paper.
You could say that.
Ours has been the same, so I can only talk so much. But let's transition. We're gonna get into baseball later in the podcast. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the NFL right now. Some big games announced for the NFL schedule, which came out I believe yesterday.
And yes. And what are we opening on?
We're opening with a really cool. We have two games that are very cool. We're opening with Carolina versus Denver in a Super Bowl rematch. Mind you, it's in Denver. So that's I think it's really cool. And again, the NFL kind of hit a home run in terms of the opening of this schedule. Of course, as we go along, things, you know, they get weaker as was last year and years before. But we open with Carolina versus Denver in Colorado, and then we also have New England at Arizona. So we have two West Coast games we're going to open with, but two cool matchups. We have a matchup of the Super Bowl champions and then two teams that were there in the NFC championship games, or the NFC and AFC championship games. So, Sean, what's your opinion on this opening matchup we get? It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's not often that they do a Super Bowl rematch right off the bat. You end with one game and you begin with the same game. Different quarterbacks, obviously, for Denver. But I'm not opposed to it. Obviously, you're going to have the champion start off the season. That's been a common theme for the last however many years. And the Arizona New England game should be a good game to watch. I'm curious to see who comes out on that one. But one of those teams are going two of those teams are going 0-1 to start the season. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think the only thing I can nitpick here about the Super Bowl rematch is I think it's good that it's happening this year. I wouldn't want to see it every year because some Super Bowls, like going back, Seattle versus Denver didn't need a rematch, but like maybe like New England versus Seattle, that would have been fun to
honestly,
watch.
I don't think this needed a rematch, but I'm not against it. If that makes
sense.
I'm
not against it either. I'm not, mainly because of the way Cam Newton came out of that game with the attitude. I kind of want to see if he's going to get redemption Von Miller strip him again. Yes. The other thing I want to point out is that, you know, Denver's quarterback situation is kind of up in the air, and I don't think we've ever really seen that with a team that's won the Super Bowl since Baltimore, where going into next year, we didn't know who their quarterback was going to be. So it's going to be intriguing to see if Denver's defense really is as good as it was this past year, if they can continue that.
They'll need to be
against the Carolina team that looks like they'll be one of the best. So then we go into week two. Not necessarily a big game, but definitely one I'm going to have my eye on. Seattle goes to St. Louis, the first game played in L.A. in, I believe, over like 20 or 30 years. It's interesting, the move from St. Louis to Los Angeles. And we've kind of hit on it before in podcasts past, but again, it's not big. More than likely, St. Louis is not going to have a great year. But it certainly is going to be interesting seeing how LA takes to the Rams.
I'm more so interested in seeing the Coliseum filled up for the first time in a very long time. Seeing football there for the first time in a long time before they build a new stadium. That's really the only intrigue in the game. Seattle's going to kill them. But regardless, that's the only thing I'm looking forward to in that.
How the city takes to football and kind of the aesthetic behind it of seeing the Coliseum again with football in it. All right, we move to week three. Kind of, again, starting to take a step back here. We have Houston at New England. Bill O'Brien going back to Bill Belichick, and kind of interesting there to see the master versus his apprentice.
I think and a lot of Houston games are going to be interesting just to see how Brock Osweiler handles a full season.
Yeah, it's going to be, again, Houston's going to have an interesting year because, you know, they still, you know, quietly Jadeveon. Yeah, they invested a lot. And also on the defensive side, we kind of want to start to see Jadeveon Clowney take off here. You know, quietly, he's been a little bit of a letdown. I won't call him a bust yet, but.
Between you and me, I think we've seen the best.
Yeah, again, there were questions about him coming out of college, his work ethic. So this is going to be an interesting test, not just for Brock Osweiler, but looking down the roster at guys like Jadeveon Clowney. And then, of course, we have Denver at Cincinnati. Again, we want to see what's up with Denver's defense. Want to see how Mark Sanchez, or mystery quarterback, plays. And, of course, Cincinnati coming back after a rough way to end their 2015 season. That's just very bizarre. So yeah, any final comments before we move to our next week of action-packed football?
No, and I expect Cincinnati to do something similar to what they did last year, where they come out strong and then they'll make the playoffs and fail.
Yeah, again, I think we're in for another
and
year.
And then Marvin Lewis will be like rewarded with an extension.
This is amazing they've kept him on so long. And also, I will say, I cannot wait for the Bengals to travel to Pittsburgh just to hear the boos that Vontaze Burfict is going to get.
Apparently,
anyway,
in Cincinnati, you fail forward.
You fail forward. All right, week 6. We were jumping over week 5. Really nothing to see there. Week 6, we have Cincinnati at New England. Again, just an interesting game, in my opinion. Probably the best game between week 4 to week 6. Yeah, again, it's kind of one of those games where you're going to watch it just because of what it could be versus what it is. Week 7, we have New England at Pittsburgh, and we have Houston at Denver. Again, another big Houston game and another big New England game.
The Houston at Denver game is way bigger than the New England game. Just because, and did you say in Denver?
In Denver.
In Denver. So Brock's going to be traveling back up, facing his old defense. They already said. I forget who it was on the defense, but they said we're ready for him. We're gonna show him what we got. So that's gonna be an interesting one.
You're gonna have the crowd there, and really any game you have, like the crowd has beef with a player on the other team. Any game kind of like that. I'll reference a game I went to last year, which was Buffalo in Philadelphia, and of course LeSean McCoy coming back. It's just there's something about games like that where you sit in the crowd and you hear the crowd's reaction to a certain player and make that a quarterback. Make that a quarterback that left big money on the table. Oh, make that a quarterback that had an opportunity to take your team and take full reign of being the number one quarterback and left for more money. Interesting. Very interesting.
I mean, we never ended up talking about the Brock Osweiler situation. I feel he was I think he feels he was disrespected by having Peyton go through the entire playoffs.
Yeah, there were certain moments, I would say, where I sympathize with Brock Osweiler, and I could say he felt disrespected.
I'm not saying I sympathize with him. I just think that's what his feelings were.
But at the same time, you have to understand that in a situation like the playoffs, you roll with what's gotten you there, and you roll with what's hot. And fortunately, he wasn't able to take the reins of the team at the time when they made the switch in the regular season, I believe. That came. They made the switch after the Kansas City game when Peyton threw 4 interceptions. I believe that's when they made the switch, and he just was not able to really take the full reign of that.
Yeah, and I mean, in the grand scheme of things, they made the right decision because they won the title. So
yes, and Super Bowls will always. Again, it's an interesting situation. If we were to spend an entire podcast again just talking about this, because there's a lot to unpack here with Brock Osweiler, Houston, and Denver, and Peyton, and all these different parts that fit. But again, Denver still has Super Bowl, and I really don't question anything on their end. Maybe during the regular season they could have tried to see if Brock Osweiler could overtake Peyton again. But I think at that point we're rolling with Peyton until we won't roll no more. All right, week 8 now. We have Arizona at Carolina, a rematch of the NFC Championship game. More than likely, this is going to go into Carolina's favor. They didn't lose a lot, if anything, during the regular season. But again, it's going to be interesting to see how Arizona takes to Carolina again and see if anything improves on their end. We're going to leapfrog over week 9. We'll move to week 10, where we have Seattle at New England.
Yes, another rematch.
Another Super Bowl rematch. in New England. This is very interesting because, you know, Seattle has not been the same team since, I believe, Wilson threw the interception. I think he was intended for a Lockett. Just interesting things in how we have multiple Super Bowl rematches in this season. This one's going to be fun in Week 10.
And all the advantage will go to New England too with this because Seattle's never been a good road team on the East Coast. So I think this favors New England very highly.
Oh yeah, this is definitely a game that's in New England's wheelhouse. And you know, of course, someone made a point, and I'm gonna dial the clocks back a bit. Someone made a point that certain games early on for New England might not matter if Tom Brady ends up getting suspended. I don't think he's going to get suspended. And if he does, it's definitely not going to be by week 10, but I just want to slip that in there. Okay, week 13, we're leapfrogging over week 12, 11 and 12. Week 13, we have Carolina at Seattle.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Though, I mean, they beat them last year there, so they could do it again.
They could do it again. It's interesting. Again, just very interesting game we have there. Again, for what it's worth, the NFL does a good job of putting big games where they need to be and kind of keep the lulls. When you have like a couple of weeks in the lull, like we're going to have week 11 and 12, not really anything to look forward to. Week 13, we get Carolina at Seattle. Week 14, we have Seattle at Green Bay.
Oh, there you could, go. The rematch from the Monday night game.
Yep.
Again.
With the replacement refs. Yeah.
Yep. Trying to get their wins back.
Then we have week 15. We have New England at Denver. Quietly, and when someone brought this stat up to me, I was floored. The one team Tom Brady struggles with throughout his career, Denver.
And you said at Denver?
It's going to be at Denver.
Yeah, Tom Brady's never been good traveling to Denver for some reason.
No, he's not.
I will say, though, I guarantee you that the people making the Seattle are just heartbroken that we cannot get another Brady Manning game, because I'm guessing that maybe don't have them go to Denver or have them face Denver this season. Like, it seems like it's been every year since, because, you know, kind of like how Indy always used to face New England just because of the matchup. I feel like maybe because, you know, Peyton's not there anymore, maybe cool it on the New England Denver games for at least a season.
I agree. You know, it kind of loses its aesthetic after Peyton retired. Still an interesting game. Again, people are gonna pound the numbers into the ground that Tom Brady doesn't play well against Denver. You know, maybe after this season, I kind of be done. I'm okay with seeing it one more time, but I think we're getting into like Orton Cena territory where it's kind of like, okay, let's back off. And then finally, the last game of the season that's gonna be worth watching, Week 16. Again, week 17, really nothing to see here unless some teams jump up a little bit.
And we won't know until that point.
Yeah, and again, that's one of the issues with picking some of these big games. We just don't know how some of these teams are going to pan out. Denver could be awful. New England could be, you know, not playing like New England normally does. We don't know. But Cincinnati at Houston, just a last little nugget for Houston. That's a big game for the Texans, and something that I'm definitely seeing if, you know, maybe Cincinnati
get some
is a little bit better
for ending their undefeated streak.
Yes. So
last season.
Yes, some big games along the schedule. So again, Sean, was there any like singular game there that you're most looking forward to?
Again, I think the one that is the most intriguing is the Houston Denver game, just because of the circumstances behind it. But it's really hard to come up with the best matchups without actually going through the season first, because you never know. Like, you get, like the Green Bay Seattle matchup, both teams could be bad, and the next thing you know, it's a bad matchup.
Yep.
So it's hard to tell at this point.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you. Houston at Denver is so good. I guess for the sake of pointing something else out, maybe Seattle versus New England could be interesting. But yeah, you're right. Again, we're just picking like on paper, these games look great, but you know, we have yet to find out really how good they could be. All right, let's transition from the schedule to some big news. Again, I wanted to talk about this last week, but I also wanted the dust to settle a little bit. St. Louis making a trade with Tennessee to move up to number one in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the hype around the draft so far has been, we know what's going to happen with number one prior to the trade. It was going to be Tennessee was going to take left tackle Laremy Tunsil. Good left tackle. With this trade now, this shakes up not just 1-2, this shakes up the entire rest of the draft. There was talk at one point that there was no way Jared Goff was not going to be or was going to be in the top 10. People were saying he was going to fall out. Maybe San Francisco doesn't go quarterback, and then Philadelphia. Why would they pick a quarterback? And then he just kind of dips off the top 10 and goes maybe later, maybe past 15 at that point. Now it looks like we're going to get another 1-2 quarterback punch here.
We're not sure because
we just don't know.
Cleveland could very well be like, we have Robert Griffin, so we'll get a solid veteran backup and we're good. And they could take a guy like Tunsil. They could take Jalen Ramsey, which, by the way, did you see his tweet earlier?
He said if
Cleveland drafts me, I'm going to retire. So, good for him.
That is a great way to build up beef, man.
Well, I mean, Eli did. It seemed to work for him. But I think obviously we know number one's going to be a quarterback. I assume it's going to be Wentz.
Mm-hmm.
I would not be shocked if Goff was taken number one, but all things seem to be going towards Wentz. Wentz is even on the cover of ESPN magazine.
Yes.
So I fully expected him to go number one to the Rams. Now, I am not sure what Cleveland's going to do. I expect San Diego, who I believe has number three, will probably go Ramsey, and possibly that leaves Dallas in a weird scenario, because Dallas is going to have their pick either go with an Ezekiel Elliott. Joey Bosa is still there. They could go with Goff as their quarterback for the future. So I think really at this point, the one X factor is Dallas. I think no matter what Cleveland decides to do, it really comes down to Dallas, because Dallas is the one that shakes up the rest of the board.
And I see where you're coming from, Sean. It's interesting because we're going to give our mock, our top five mock draft at a later date on the podcast.
I was going to say, I'm not ready for that.
No. But I think in a way you're right. If Dallas elects to go Ezekiel Elliott instead of maybe Joey Bosa or a quarterback, that just, everything's off the board at that point. But I'm going to draw a comparison with you. And I'll get to the logistics of the trade. More than likely, Tennessee is going to win out in the long run in terms of all the picks they got. But this it's weird because this, and correct me if I'm wrong, this has a feel almost of Peyton Manning and Ryan Leaf, where you have Jared Goff, who plays the role of Peyton Manning in this, where it's like, we know how good he can be. We know he's going to be an NFL starter. We know he's going to be a good NFL starter. We have no idea what we can get with Carson Wentz.
What college did Ryan Leaf come from?
I believe Ryan Leaf, and I'm going to look this up really quick.
Okay,
Ryan, we know. Okay, Peyton Manning, we know he came from Tennessee.
Uh-huh.
Goff comes from California. Type in Ryan Leaf right now. We have this guy who comes from North Dakota State. Now, Ryan Leaf, he came from Washington State.
Not too well known.
Not a really well-known school, but the hype around Ryan Leaf, if I remember correctly, was this guy could be one of the great quarterbacks in NFL history.
I'm not feeling that with the Wentz hype, but there is
because
hype there.
Wentz, in terms of character, I'm talking in comparison to the hype, and I agree. Wentz has a far better character than Ryan Leaf had or ever will.
Oh, no, I'm saying Leaf had more hype to him than Wentz has right now. But I'm not saying that there's no hype. There is some, but I don't think it's to the level that Leaf had.
No, but I see comparisons to this. Now, if I'm St. Louis, and I've been a Goff supporter, I'm infatuated with Wentz because he does look good. But, we've talked about this. It's only in these kind of like set up to look good pro days and these scripted practices and stuff like that, where it's like they're doing everything to make him look good. And in the one instance, they tried something that didn't make him look good, where they put water on the ball. Because believe it or not, North Dakota State, I have no idea how big the tuition is up there. They play in a dome in North Dakota. Floored me there. But they play in a dome, so they don't have a lot of rain. They don't practice in rain. They don't even play in rain that often. And they wet the football, and Wentz threw a duck.
I mean, it's a smart thing to test people on.
Yes. They did with Jared Goff. Jared Goff did not have the same issue.
I mean, not that it rains all the time in California, but, you know,
no.
Still, but you'd like to know.
It was surprised because they showed it side by side. They showed the Goff wet ball throw and they showed the Wentz wet ball throw. Now, both aren't really good, but at least Goff gets it, you know, about 10 or 12 yards downfield. Carson Wentz didn't even get it like 6 yards downfield.
Yeah, he's inexperienced with it. I mean, this is what's going to happen. I mean, he's going to be taken number one, and it's going to be growing pains because guess what? He's probably going to be the opening day starter. Yep. Unless they just decide that Case Keenum had an amazing training camp, which I would not put past Jeff Fisher because for some reason he's crazy like that. But you know, I don't know if this is the right move or the wrong move. Obviously, I am on record as saying I prefer Goff. But it's just a matter of where Goff goes. Now, if Goff gets drafted by Cleveland, I get a little less confident in him because it's Cleveland. But if he gets drafted by, say, a Dallas or maybe an Eagles or even a San Francisco, some team in there that could actually use him and use him effectively.
That has a track record of taking care of quarterbacks and growing them.
Yeah, then I would be more confident. But Cleveland's a place to die. I don't know how anyone can be successful there. I wish RG3 all the best in the world, but it might not be enough.
I'm just seeing it right now. RG3 being carried off the field after a hit, and just that'd be it. That would be a shame too. But I want to get into the logistics of picks really quick before we get back into where things are going to line up. Tennessee sends the number one overall pick, a fourth round pick, and a sixth round pick all this year to the Rams. In exchange, they get the Rams 15th. 2 second rounders this year, a third round pick this year, and they'll also get the Rams' first and third round picks next year.
You know what this sounds a lot like?
It literally sounds like when New Orleans traded up to get Ricky Williams.
I was going to go Rams
made the swap. Okay.
When they swapped with Washington. That's what it sounds like to me. Very, very similar, actually. If you look at it, but yeah, they're giving up a lot to do this, and I hope they know what they're doing.
Oh yeah, just to put it in perspective for you, after this, the next Rams pick will not happen for 48 hours. So they either have to hit a home run here, or they are done.
See, now with that, I question some of their moves, like getting rid of Laurinaitis and who was the other guy they got rid of?
Laurinaitis, Rodney McLeod. They cut Chris Long.
Chris Long, there you go. Yeah, I question some of those, unless it was just budgetary reasons, because
you lost a Pro Bowl safety.
They're not going to get
very good linebacker and a very good defensive end.
Yeah, they're not going to get replacements that they can draft for those guys, at least suitable replacements in the earlier rounds. I don't know. I think Jeff Fisher might have went loony. I think that's what this is.
This has the feel of something a team does when they're trying to get fans into their stadium. And lo and behold, they moved to Los Angeles. So again, this
I don't know. I think RG3 could have done that. I don't think they had to move up. I think if they would have signed RG3 or maybe, I don't know, who's another big quarterback name that they could have gotten.
Brock Osweiler?
I don't know if that's a big one. Like, the rumors about Peyton, possibly, you know, but, and I think what I read was Peyton would have done it, but they couldn't guarantee him the starting role, so he said no.
How could you not guarantee him the starting role in Los Angeles?
Well, look what he did.
What do you have, Peyton? It doesn't matter. If you're going to go out and get a guy like Peyton Manning, for name, to bring in Pete to put butts in seats, you cannot have him back up anyone.
Hey, the grand scheme of things is you want to win games. And if he's not going to give you the best chance of winning, then he's not going to play.
I would at least think that you would have Peyton Manning as your starter until week two. And then after you have the home opener and people come out to see Peyton Manning in Los Angeles Rams uniform and they see that he's not playing well, then you can put Keenum in. And that's your way of getting people to you sell out those games. Sell jerseys, and then you go to try and win.
I think that's just a little too much too late. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I don't know.
Again, whoever, whatever happens here, Morton, this is the way I would see it panning out. If the Rams go with Goff, I think it's a good move on their part because you know you're getting a decent starter. If Wentz goes to Cleveland, I don't see good things for Wentz, but I don't see him being one of their bigger busts in franchise history. I don't think he's going to be couch level. I don't think he's going to be Manziel level.
I think
but
his
I
play
think he's
will
not
be,
gonna be good.
To the level of Case Keenum.
Yep.
I think they're replacing Case Keenum with another Case Keenum.
If he goes to LA, yes, I see that. In terms of Cleveland, though, I don't know because he definitely is a guy you can't start immediately, or at least one I wouldn't start immediately. But again, we don't know how these coaches think. We don't know how these GMs think. Well, we do, but we don't always know. But he's not a guy I would start immediately. He cannot play in this league yet. You know, we're talking about a guy. Yeah. This is the guy that at North Dakota State was playing teams. I'll pull up their schedule here and just read off the names of these schools.
Oh,
they were
no
playing.
Names. It was a bunch of no-name teams. Was he even in a bowl game?
He was in the Senior Bowl, but that was about it. In the FCS, they have the Super Bowl subdivision championship games, which NCAA Division I football championship semifinal, they beat Richmond. Woohoo. And they beat I can't even pronounce this school's name. They beat Jacksonville State.
Yeah. We get the point. They faced a bunch of no names.
No names.
Yeah, I don't like the idea of putting them out there immediately, but they're going to have to. So that's just how it is. They're not going to have a choice.
Yeah. Maybe Carson Wentz can have fun playing the Montana Grizzlies or whoever he played, but again, this is a guy he's going to need a couple of years to sit, and it's whether or not you're comfortable having him sit behind Casey Keenum or RG3, and I'm not comfortable with either. So this is why maybe St. Louis or I'm keep telling him St. Louis. Los Angeles does this jump to get him and put him behind Keenum, or maybe they did it because they want Goff.
Or maybe
either
they're
going
to swerve us and take someone else.
maybe they'll take a kicker. Maybe we'll get one draft where someone where
no, maybe it's over. Like a Joey Bosa is going to move all the way up to number one.
That would be weird.
It would be. It would make sense why they got rid of other defensive guys.
Yeah, they want to go with the. That's a good observation, Sean.
I don't think that's what they're thinking, but you know. You never know.
No, because, yeah, you just never know. But it definitely something that we're going to keep our eye with. All right, so we are transitioning from NFL to Major League Baseball. Interesting opening week of baseball. I'll say that. Not a lot of teams have kind of pulled away just yet. We've had some teams that have undefeated streaks that have since been broken. I believe at one point Cincinnati was like 4 or 5-0, and now they're 6-6 or something along the lines of that. But Baltimore had a Cincinnati.
Are you sure? Are you sure you're not confusing them with Baltimore?
No, I believe Cincinnati, they swept the Phillies to open things up. I believe. I don't know if I could be wrong here. Again, there have been so many games. But
what, did they lose 7 straight? They're not even 500. Are you sure that's the team you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, of course not now. But Baltimore, they are 8-3. At one point, they were 8-0. It's been a crazy year. So we also have the backdrop of this. We have a guy hitting home runs left and right in Trevor Story. Just crazy things happening so far in the opening to open the season. But the division's starting to kind of pull away a little bit in terms of where we're going to see these teams line up. But so far, Sean, to open the season, what have your thoughts been? If there are any, because of how early we are in the season.
As expected, the Nationals and the Cubs are good. I think the Dodgers have been a nice surprise. Their pitching has actually held up since losing Greinke. What else? The Orioles, they were undefeated for a while. I think they made it to 7 or 8-0. That's not going to stick. Everyone else is just pretty much average, you know? It's like there's a lot of parity right now, but again, this is very early in the league. It's very hard to see this team as they're the team to beat right now at this moment.
Yeah, and to go off my point earlier about the Reds, that one point the Reds were 5-1 and they have gone on to lose. They've gone on to lose 6 out of their last 7. So, yep.
Oh that, man, that, 5-1. That's a monster.
They had swept the Phillies. They won the series against the Pirates. Everyone was like, "Oh, they won the Reds could be something."
They won 3 games, lost 1, and then won 2 more. That's amazing.
Yep. But yeah, the way the season opens up, it's kind of weird. I want your thoughts on this Trevor Story kid. Again, we both kind of agree, flash in the pan, but it was kind of interesting to watch him hit all these home runs to open up the season. Again, it's Colorado, so balls fly out of there. Mm-hmm. But any comments on him at all? Or
I mean, you know, he had a great first week of the season. He's kind of tampered down right now, second week, but you know. I'd like to see him succeed. There's nothing wrong with having a success story like that. You got to look at where he's playing in Colorado. You know, guys hit him out pretty easily there. But you know, more power to him. I hope he has a good season.
And before we get into the harder stuff, again, Minnesota at 3-9, definitely something we're going to keep our eye on because that team doesn't improve. Again, still early in the season, well, 12 games in. But
I mean. Look at them last year. I mean, they almost made the playoffs, but realistically, were they ever in contention?
No. I think the benefit Minnesota has going for it is the division they play in is not really overly strong. Again, they still play in a division with the Royals, but the Tigers have taken steps back. Cleveland's constantly in a circle. Chicago's been rebuilding for past 5 years.
Chicago's been doing pretty well this season. I'd say that they're much improved this year.
They're much improved.
And Detroit's always a threat.
I want to see some big games out of Chicago this year. I want to see some big games there. Detroit, again, they're kind of starting to sputter a little bit. I nothing on that team really catches my eye. Again, you never count a team with Miggy on your team out. But again, I will say that they are a team that you definitely have to keep your eye on, but not one I'm seeing right now as a team that's going to make the playoffs. In my mind, I don't see them making the playoffs.
Well, it's hard for three teams in one division to make the playoffs.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you won the division. You have 2 wild cards nowadays.
But all of them coming from that division? That's tough.
Yeah. No, it's tough. No, I agree. But completely impossible. No. But when you have Toronto and Boston, Texas. You never know what's going
to
happen.
I'm waiting for Boston to slide. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. We know Boston more than likely. New York's still out there. You know, of course, you never know what you're going to get with LA. Seattle could do something. And then, of course, you have Houston, which is a nice young team to root for, which, again, they're getting a lot of these teams are getting their stuff together. But speaking of getting their stuff together, some crazy officiating going on in the opening week. And we're already starting to see some of the rule changes implement come into play. Going back to, I believe this is about the 3rd game of the season, Tampa Bay versus Toronto, bottom of the 9th, final run here. We have, I believe, a runner on 2nd and a runner on 1st. Ground balls hit, they go to turn a double play, and a slide causes the throw to go offline and the runner to be safe at first. And I believe a run ended up scoring out of that. Go back, they challenge the play, they go back, and they call the Chase Utley rule, which is now a runner can't slide past second base. I'm not really completely 100% up on this rule, but basically when you slide and you go past second base and you have the intent of going past second base to break up a double play, they implement the Chase Utley rule so that way players are safe. And I understand that. Again, it's baseball. You have to keep some aspects of it in line. We've had this debate before as to whether or not the slide was okay. Was it too much? But in this instance, rules called, double play is upheld, and the game is over. Do you have an issue with a baseball game ending on a replay?
No. Football games end on replays all the time.
But again, I never thought it'd get to the point. Again, I guess never thought, it's kind of hard to say, but it didn't ever enter my mind that baseball would kind of not come to this, but we would see this.
Well, Benny, do you want baseball to be that old archaic sport where it's all the old people and we're set in our ways and we're not going to change anything?
No. I think some changes have to be made. I like the fact the game's starting to speed up a little bit. But at the same time, you know, there is an aesthetic to games ending on weird plays. Like going back to the World Series with the Cardinals and Royals, where you have the out call or the runner's called safe when he's, you know, foot off the back. Things like that. Like it's fun because you always remember where you were. Even the perfect game with Andre Galarraga, where you know, he should have had his perfect game, but thus it was nullified. That's cool. There's something cool to that.
I mean,
but
the whole point of the rule is to protect the guy at second base. No, not the runner. The guy, the second, I guess shortstop. Fielder, it depends on what the placement is. But second base, shortstop, whatever.
Whoever's turned double play.
Yeah, it's supposed to protect that person because obviously, you know, you saw what happened that Chase Utley did to
Tejada.
And, you know, I'm okay with it. Like, if this is the rule, they're trying to protect people. Maybe don't ground out into a double play. How about that? You know, that'll solve all your problems. Yeah. Just do better at your job. How about that?
Now you're right again. And when we get to our second call, you know, we're going to go into this a little bit more about judgment. But again, don't go. Yeah, you're already sighing at this. No, I agree. Definitely not a judgment thing, but definitely something where, you know, don't. Try not to hit into a double play. Maybe, I don't know, take some more pitches. But
it's a
just
rule.
Interesting.
It's a new rule. They just
it's a new rule, yes.
You got to follow the rules.
Now, our next thing we're going to talk about, I'm going to put on my Philly fandom glasses here.
Oh, put like
it's
they
a
haven't
rule
been
that's
on.
Been it's a new rule. Well, not a rule, new rule, an old rule that's been involved in the game of baseball for quite some time. It's the infield fly rule. What's interesting about this particular use of the rule is the game in which it happened. It was the Phillies versus the Padres. 3-2 in, I believe, the sixth inning. And first things first is the backdrop of this is one of the first times I've ever seen Ryan Howard pinch hit with no outs and the bases loaded. Mm-hmm. They pinch hit Ryan Howard.
I mean, he's useless. Why not?
It was a lefty on the mound, so I agree with it. But it was just kind of like, it was shocking. I wouldn't say shocking. I would say it was kind of surprising that we would see a guy who used to be one of the most money RBI guys in baseball now being pinch hit for a first baseman, mind you, Darren Ruff, who's not going to make it in baseball.
Give you better odds than Ryan Howard.
For now. I don't have a lot of faith in him. But for this game, they pinch hit Ruff for Howard. Ruff pops out to the outfield where the infielder's going back. The outfielder loses it. Shortstop runs back, goes to field it, drops the ball.
Well, you're missing.
Run scores. I'll get to that in a second. Run scores from third.
That's kind of important.
However, as soon as he scores, he turns around and he's motioning for a guy to go to third. Runner from second to third gets out. I'm thinking, oh, now we have runner at second. Runner at first, one out. They call the infield fly rule, which means that the hitter or the batter is automatically out, and the runners can advance at their own risk, which unfortunately Odubel Herrera then was tagged out at third. Now, of course, almost benefited from score. He almost benefited from kind of a lazy throw in, which he could have slid and got safe, but we'll talk about that later. But an interesting sequence of events. Or not at all. But an interesting sequence of events where a double play is called because of the infield fly rule when the ball was probably about 25 feet into the outfield. Now, of course, we both saw the play and we both, you know, had different reactions to it. I, of course, was angry. But
Because I made the argument.
Now, of course,
Phillies fan.
Yes. And the play, I believe Pete McCann came out to try and challenge the play.
Can't challenge it.
Can't challenge it because it's a judgment call.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes into that gray area of, we know if you're going to call that, and you have to call balls and strikes, and then it opens up an entire different argument. But as a Phillies fan, I can tell you I was furious because, you know, regardless of the way the team's set up, you want to see your team win. You with the Astros, me with the Phillies.
Regardless of the rules, I want to see them win.
It was an interesting thing because it was an infield fly rule called on a ball that was hit 25
feet
in the outfield.
And okay, so if you watch the play, what happens is he hits it. It does seem like something that would be called an infield fly. And yes. what happens is that the wind takes the ball while it's up in the air, and it pushes it back into the outfield further than they expected. Mm-hmm. So what ends up happening is because, you know, when the umpires call the infield fly rule, they got to make that call fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And they did it, and the ball continued to travel further than it was expected to because the wind carried it out. Now, that's not really anyone's fault. If you can't really fault someone for weather conditions, just because it's windy doesn't mean that everything is completely different. We need to take into account that, hey, the ball traveled further and now we need to go back and look at it, and we need to challenge everything. And no, it's just a simple mistake because of weather conditions. And you can say judgment call, and it kind of is a judgment call, but at the same time, when they did it and they made the call in the amount of time that they needed to, it just so happens in this freak occurrence, because let's be honest, it's a freak occurrence.
Yes.
I should set the backdrop
of this is neither team, Padres or Phillies, are expected to be contenders for the next couple of years.
It doesn't matter. You're talking
the backdrop
about what
of this
happened
game is
as opposed to who the teams are.
This game is irrelevant, but it's just of what this moment that happened.
Yeah. So it drops, and they call the infield fly. I don't have a problem with any of it. I mean, yeah, it's not a great call to go against the Phillies, but at the same time, it's weather. You know, that's what's going to happen. You know, you play outdoors, you run the risk of balls flying and being pushed one way or the other because of the wind. There's been home run balls that have gone fair because of the wind. You know, sometimes you benefit from it, sometimes you don't. So it's not like, you know, this is something that, oh, we need to crack down on this because this is going to ruin the game. No, it's just a simple little thing that happened.
And I think at first that was my reaction was, man, this needs to be corrected. This needs to be fixed, you know, because Philly fan forever thinking, you know, the baseball is out to get them, or the big corporations are out to get them. But at the end, you know, you're right.
They are
Sean,
a big corporation. What are you talking about? Philadelphia, well, they're a big market.
Like baseball is out to get us, you know, things like that. But
why?
You know, in the end, you're right, Sean. Moving past it. In the end, you're right, Sean, that our reactions to it were a little bit much. And I will say again, it's a judgment call, but in my mind, I was thinking there should be a way to fix this. There should be a way to kind of fix this on the fly.
You can't fix
of
weather.
Of course, hindsight's 2020. You're right. The wind took it.
That's like saying, I want this game thrown out because it rained. No, you can't do that.
Well, that's the case. We wouldn't have a World Series in Philly. But again, it's just, it was interesting. It's interesting. I definitely want to try and find the audio of the Phillies play-by-play and radio team, because I'm never a big fan of the TV team, but the radio team's interesting to listen to, and Fransky's response to the call is just, it's amazing. He's just like, whoa? Like he almost like that sound you hear on like the Home Improvement show where it's like, whoa? Like he just has that really loud like, what just happened?
Because confusing. We weren't
very
sure
confused
because the end result wasn't what we saw in the first place.
Yes. And of course, you know, anytime you hear LA react to anything is just great. Larry Anderson reacting to stuff is just great. He should have his own YouTube channel, just him reacting to things.
Mm.
But yeah. So,
by
any
the
final
way, I
comments
just wanna,
on that?
I just want to point out that the Astros were had a big rule change against them, and it cost them the game.
Oh,
but
yes.
You don't hear me talking about it.
What was this?
It was the Chase Utley rule.
Chase Utley rule. Chase Utley rule is like that guy in the alleyway that sneaks up on you and steals your wallet.
No, but you don't hear me talking about it because I understand what's going on, as opposed to short-sighted fans who are just like, oh, everything that goes against my team is the worst ever.
Well, I think in terms of the Chase Utley rule, I think people are upset about the Chase Utley rule because it's such a 50-50. There's a side against it and there's a side for it. When it happened, unfortunately, it happened in a big market like New York. And my immediate argument was, if this happened in Cleveland in the same situation, no one would talk about it. If this happened in Milwaukee in the same situation, no one would talk about it. It happened in New York on a big stage. People are talking about it. And I think that's one of the reasons why it became a rule is because people were talking. It was seen by a lot of people. This happened before. And as a matter of fact, it happened in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Where
their
second baseman, second or shortstop, something broke his leg as a result of it. Or in Minnesota, going a couple years back, they had that big foreign player from, I believe it was Korea, had his leg injured. Never made it back to baseball. It's happened before.
But we can't go over the rule just because it's a rule. It's like,
I know.
It's like you may hate the NFL catch rule, but you got to follow the rule, you know?
Yes.
You can't be like, oh, that was a catch. Well, in the rule book, is it a catch?
I think the bigger rule to relate it to would be like some of the tackling rules where, you know, no helmet to helmet and things like that, where it's like, okay, we get it. Concussions and injuring players. And everyone ever was seeing that happen. But at the same time, some things are just so bang, bang that it's really tough to make that call.
Okay, but if it's in the rule book, you can't get angry at it because it's a rule.
No, Sean, I agree with you. I agree with you. It's again, going back to the moment. You know, it just there's such a 50-50 reaction to it that I think people are angry about it because they feel it's knee jerk when it's done to help players. Trust me, I never wanted to see Ruben Tejada get his leg broken, and I'm an anti Mets guy, and I never want to see anything bad happen. Well,
I don't know. Maybe, I've heard you say a few things.
Maybe one or two Mets, but I never want to see. Legitimately, I never want to see anything bad happen to anyone.
I don't want to tell the people what you said about Matt Harvey because that's not very PG.
And with that, that just about does it for us here. Of course, it's been a fun show as always. We will be back in a couple of weeks with the NFL draft. And of course, we have WWE's Payback coming up, I believe, next week. 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
2 weeks. So we have Payback the same weekend as the draft.
Is it?
I believe it is. April 30th is the last day for the NFL draft.
Oh, geez. I almost cursed.
You're going
there.
Right into it. Definitely going to be a lot of fun. We'll have a mock. We'll do a brief mock draft with myself, Sean, and of course we'll get.
I'll try.
The ever, I guess you could say, intelligent and inspiring. My brother Vincent, and we'll talk a little bit about the draft as well.
Is he a jaded Phillies fan as well?
He is a very much jaded Phillies fan.
I can't talk to you people.
You can't. You really can't. We need to get someone from the West Coast. We need to get like
why?
What's Matt Hasselbeck doing?
Like, why? Just why get do him we on need the, someone from yeah, the West
so we
Coast.
Get a, we get so we get a so we get a different like I don't know perspective on things.
I'm the unbiased one.
All right, let's get a bias for a different team. That's what I'm saying.
Oh,
like, we get like
great.
A Dallas Cowboys fan or something.
I know a real Yankees edge. Fan. You want to bring him on?
No. All right,
horrible
Sean. Where
idea.
Can the people follow you?
At @_BrackShow on Twitter. But don't tweet me, because if you tweet me, I'm going to be angry at you.
And you can follow me at @BNP_Express. Fun show as always. We'll be back with you in a couple of weeks to talk about the NFL draft and, of course, Payback in the WWE. Take care, everyone.